Last year, around this time, it was March 19, 2023, I gave a sermon here titled In Quest of Living Religion, and it was a sermon that was addressing the question of how a religious organization like this one, the Skagit Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, how it approaches religion, and in particular, how it attempts to give verbal, written expression to its religious approach. Now, the reason I gave that sermon was because the broader religious organization of which this fellowship is a part, I'm talking about the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations, which is headquartered in Boston, Massachusetts. This association is involved in a process examining whether the current written expression of our approach in religion might be updated. Such a review is mandated in our association's bylaws at least every 15 years, and this current review has been tasked to a 9-person Unitarian Universalist study commission that was appointed by our Unitarian Universalist Board of Trustees in 2020. Their task primarily involves examining the second article of our association's bylaws, because it's in the second article to bylaw that we attempt to express in written form, both to ourselves and to others, the way that we understand and approach religion. So it's in this Article 2 bylaw, that's where what is popularly known as our 7 principles and 6 sources are housed. And what has happened then is that this study commission has recommended significant changes to this Article 2 bylaw and to the 7 principles and 6 sources. Their proposed revision of this Article 2 bylaw with some adjustments passed at the General Assembly last summer with well over 50% of the vote that was required to move it along to the next stage, and that next stage will take place this summer at the General Assembly, in which the proposed revision will be voted on for final passage, and if passed by a 2/3 majority, will, if the present plan prevails, replace the current Article 2 statements. You can see this is going to be a bit complex this morning, all right? Stay with me. So this brings me then to this year's sermon, because I suspect that most of you have not been paying too much attention to these associational matters. Am I correct in that? Yes, and nor have I, actually. And until a couple of months ago, when the Sunday services team for a sister congregation, the one in Sequim, Port Angeles, the Olympic Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, requested that I, as a Unitarian Universalist minister, though retired, make an attempt to bring them up to speed on what is happening at the associational level, which also meant trying to bring myself up to speed on these things. And so I thought, having done all of this work, I'd offer it to you this morning as well. And actually, this proposed revision of Article 2 has the potential to be very significant in our congregations in our association. So what I'm going to endeavor to do this morning is to walk you through the proposed changes to our Unitarian Universalist Association's Article 2 bylaws, primarily in an educational way, and I will indicate what changes are being proposed, as well as where some of the concerns are, and then I'll conclude with a couple of personal pastoral-type perspectives. So following that lengthy introduction to the service theme, I also want to introduce the responsive reading this morning with a lengthy introduction as well. It's a responsive reading I put together from this little wallet-sized card titled, What Do Unitarian Universalists Believe? These little cards are published by our association, and they can be ordered at the UUA bookstore and gift shop, where they are advertised as follows. With 10 clear statements of Unitarian Universalist belief, this pocket-sized card is a handy resource to offer newcomers in Sunday worship or anywhere, pack of 100 for $10. So as it happens, the author of these 10 statements of Unitarian Universalist belief is the Reverend Dr. David Rankin. And he was, I worked with him as an associate for 16 years when he was the senior minister at a large religiously liberal unaffiliated congregation. It was the Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. But prior to that, David had served four other Unitarian Universalist congregations, during which time he had written these 10 statements, which were then actually translated at the Fountain Street Church into not what the Unitarian Universalists believe, but what the religious liberals believe. Worked very well. Now, once asked David about the origin of these 10 statements, he told me that it was a series of statements in which he was attempting to summarize the commonly held beliefs, values, principles, and processes of Unitarian Universalists, having surveyed those who identified them as such. And I this proved this week to be a rather personal, poignant moment for me. As I was working on this service this past Friday, I received an email that David had actually died that morning, just this past Friday morning. And as I say, I was his associate for 16 years, so I will try to get through this. He died in Moscow, Idaho, where he had retired the last few years. It's where he went to the university as well. He was 86 years old. But at any rate, I'd like to invite you now to join me in this, I think it's a really beautiful responsive reading from David Rankin. And George, could we have the first slide on that then? So we believe in the freedom of religious expression. All individuals should be encouraged to develop their own personal theologies and to present openly their religious opinions without fear of censor or reprisal.
We
believe in the authority of reason and conscience. The ultimate arbiter in religion is not a church or a document or an official, but the personal choice and decision of the individual. We believe in the unity of experience. There is no fundamental conflict between faith and knowledge, religion and the world, the sacred and the secular, since they all have their source in the same reality. We believe in the ethical application of religion. Good works are the natural product of a good faith, the evidence of an inner grace that finds completion in social and community involvement. We believe in the necessity of the democratic process. Records are open to scrutiny, elections are open to members, and ideas are open to criticism so that people might govern themselves. Thank you. To my mind, this is still about as fine a summary statement as you can get on the beliefs, principles, values of the liberal approach in religion. And as I say, it's a statement that's particularly personally important to me at this time. My purpose this morning, as I said, introducing this theme, is to walk you through the proposed changes to our Unitarian Universalist Association's Article 2 bylaws. So let's take a look at the recommendation of this study commission, and I'm going to compare the current Article 2 statements and the proposed changes to them. And because there's a fair amount to take in, I'm going to split this educational type sermon into two parts, separated by a musical interlude by Sally. Also, because some of this is a bit complex, I plan to provide a print version that will appear in your upcoming newsletter. Now, in comparing the current and proposed statements, I'm going to follow the order of the proposed revision to Article 2, and that begins with the purposes of our association. George, could you please bring up the first slide on that? There you go. So here's the statement of purposes in our current Article 2 bylaws, all right? I'll just read those to you. The Unitarian Universalist Association shall devote its resources to and exercise its corporate powers for religious, educational, and humanitarian purposes. The primary purpose of the association is to serve the needs of its member congregations, organize new congregations, extend and strengthen Unitarian Universalist institutions, and implement its principles. Next slide, George. And here is the proposed revision of the purposes under the heading of Article 2, Purposes and Covenant. Now, this is the lead section of the proposal, of the proposed revision. The Unitarian Universalist Association will devote its resources to and use its organizational powers for religious, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Its primary purposes are to assist congregations in their vital ministries, to support and train leaders, both lay and professional, to foster lifelong faith formation and spiritual development, to heal historic injustices, to support and encourage the creation of new Unitarian Universalist committees, and to advance our Unitarian Universalist values in the world. The Unitarian Universalist Association will actively engage its members in the transformation of the world through liberating love. As you can see, this recommended revised statement of our association's purposes is more specific in its content and emphasizes values more than principles, particularly social justice values, and that's something we're going to see a lot more of as we go through these proposed revisions. Now, some persons, let us say those of more suspicious minds, have wondered what specifically is entailed in that final statement under purposes, which reads, the Unitarian Universalist Association will actively engage its members in the transformation of the world through liberating love. Some have wondered, what does the UUA have in mind there, and how does it relate to the authority of individual congregations? So those are some of the questions about that. Now, moving on, next slide, George. This is what our current principles are, and many of you will be familiar to this, but I'll read them rather quickly. And that's actually the part that starts out our Article 2 now, C2-1 principles. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and finally, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And now here's the proposed revision, which, as you will see, is in many ways a major revision, both in content and appearance. George, could we have that first slide on this? It's section C2-2, Values and Covenant. I'll read the introduction, which is as follows. As Unitarian Universalists, we covenant congregation to congregation and through our association to support and assist one another in our ministries. We draw from our heritages of freedom, reason, hope, and courage, building on the foundation of love. Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. We are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love. Inseparable from one another, these shared values are, and we'll come to those presently. So, well, this is up. I want you to notice that here, values replaces principles, and the central value, the foundational value, being love. Now, last year when I was here, I said that personally I like the emphasis on values in religion, as well as that the value love, the heart value, is placed at the center, at the heart of our approach to religion. Over the years, I've given many sermons exploring our English word love as having a cosmic value. It's a word that has to do with universal attraction, elemental powers of attraction and bonding. They're present at the very beginning of the universe, and they are the powers that make this one web, one net, one great gravitational field, so that we and all things are bound together in unity for all eternity. And thus, love fits nicely with a religious association named the Unitarian Universalist Association. But I also said last year that our use of the English word love is that love, as that popular song from the 1950s goes, is a many-splendored thing. And it's susceptible of multiple meanings. And as some have commented, everyone loves love. So, what kind of love are we talking about? And that brings us to the next slide, which speaks to the main values of the kind of love that the study commission has recommended, shared values, as they describe them, that are inseparable one from another. And as you see, the main values are surrounding the central value of love that the study commission is recommending are presented in this form of an image. And while the image is before us, I'm going to read the image description that is given by the study commission. So you can watch that while I read the description. This image is of a chalice with an overlay of the word love over the flame, with six outstretched arms that create a circle around each of the core values and form a six-petal flower shape. Each arm is a different color, and clockwise, they are interdependence orange, equity red, transformation purple, pluralism blue, generosity green, and justice yellow. And says the commission, the UUA may create visual representations of the values which put love at the center and interconnect each value, and they may periodically update that image. A version of this image shall be included with image description after shared Unitarian Universalist values in the published version of these bylaws. And so, George, could you just bring up the slide of what I just read? So that's what I just read. Again, I'll have this for you in print version. So now what follows next in this section titled Values and Covenant, the section that is proposed, again, to take the place of the current seven principles. What's happening here is there's going to be a statement and covenant related to each of those six values. Each value begins with a brief one-sentence description of that particular value, and then followed by one or two sentences of covenantal resolve and aspiration to live out those values. And these statements, as you will see, are connected by the study commission in various ways to the principles of our current Article 2, and I will point out those connections as we go through them. So, George, could you bring up the first slide there, which is interdependence. And so I'll just read that. We honor the interdependent web of all existence. With reverence for the great web of life and with humility, we acknowledge our place in it. And then the covenant. We covenant to protect Earth and all beings from exploitation. We will create and nurture sustainable relationships of care and respect, mutuality and justice. We will work to repair harm and damaged relationships. So my comment here is that the first part of this value, the statement part, brings forward our current seventh principle, which is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And interestingly, the word reverence takes the place of respect from our current seventh principle. This was actually a change that had been suggested, a suggested revision of our current seventh principle by a previous study commission. That was in 2009. But at that time, the proposed recommendation to replace respect with reverence got a lot of pushback in certain quarters and was perhaps part of the reason that the recommendations of that Article 2 study from 2009 were not passed. I think that we can say that the word reverence engages the heart more than the word respect does, which relates probably more to the intellect and mind. And then following this statement of reverence for the great web of life and the interdependent web of all existence is a covenantal aspirational statement of commitment and engagement, the sense that this value of the reverence for the great web of life needs to lead to action. Now the second principle, the second value is pluralism. And we celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. We covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We embrace our differences and commonalities with love, curiosity, and respect. So the value statement on pluralism picks up our current first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Interesting to me here is that sacred beings could include all beings and all elements of being, not just human beings, but that was actually suggested in previous revisions of the current first principle. However, the second part of this statement limits the value of pluralism to human beings with the phrase diverse in culture, experience, and theology. And then the covenantal aspirational aspect of this petal of the flower picks up on what is currently our fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and connects it to the pluralistic embrace of diverse in culture, experience, and theology. Third value, George, and that is justice. We work to be diverse, multicultural, beloved communities where all thrive. And we covenant to dismantle racism and all forms of systemic oppression. We support the use of inclusive democratic processes to make decisions within our congregations, our association, and society at large. This section in both the value statement and the aspirational covenantal part most directly picks up on what has been proposed as an eighth principle in our association. And a number of congregations have adopted that eighth principle independently, but it's not been adopted by the whole association. You actually had it posted right there. I saw before the service, George was showing it to me, eight principles. But that's something that certain individual congregations have adopted. Let me read what that principle is. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. So you see how this is very much embedded in this. It's also embedded, in a way, in the whole document that I'm presenting to you this morning. So this value of justice also picks up on our current fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Our fourth value, George, is transformation. We adapt to the changing world. We covenant to collectively transform and grow spiritually and ethically. Openness to change is fundamental to our Unitarian and Universalist heritages, never complete and never perfect. So this value of transformation recognizes change, process, and evolution as being fundamental to nature and being, and it calls us individually and collectively to be open to it and humble in the face of it. Our fifth value is generosity. We cultivate a spirit of gratitude and hope, and we covenant to freely and compassionately share our faith, presence, and resources. Our generosity connects us to one another in relationships of interdependence and mutuality. Now, at last year's General Assembly, there was a motion which didn't pass to have gratitude as one of the petals, one of the main values surrounding love, not here simply as a part of generosity. That motion didn't pass. This year, there's going to be a couple others coming forward. One is peace, and the other is reason. The sixth value is coming up, and that is equity. We declare that every person has the right to flourish with inherent dignity and worthiness. We covenant to use our time, wisdom, attention, and money to build and sustain fully accessible and inclusive communities. This statement, again, picks up on our current first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But some have asked, why the word worthiness rather than worthy? There is an answer to that question from the study commission, which has to do with the history of our country in which, quote, monetary worth was assigned to human beings. I will put the full response in the print version of this sermon, as it's rather complex. But I mention it here because there is another amendment that will be offered at the upcoming General Assembly that removes the word worthiness, but recognizes the desire to change the current term in the first principle of inherent worth. And that proposal, that proposed amendment will read, it's not on there, we declare that every person is inherently worthy and has the right to flourish with dignity, love, and compassion. So this has been a bit of an overview of the recommendation by the Article II Study Commission to replace the second seven principles with this section on values and covenant, a substantial change, as you see. And George, before we're going to take this musical break, could you bring us back to slide 19, that flower image? There it is. So as we leave this section, I want to bring up another approach to this entire values covenant section that was brought to you this past January 21 in a service that was led by the Reverends Melvin Hoover and Rose Eddington. That sermon was titled Digging the Garden of Beloved Community. A few weeks ago, I had a chance to listen to the audio tape of that. And this past Tuesday, the three of us had about an hour and a half. I hadn't met them before. I didn't know them. Had an hour and a half conversation that was largely a Zoom conversation, largely about this section of Article 2. Now, if some of you may remember that the approach that they are suggesting is to replace the word love at the center of that flower with the words beloved community. So the center of some religions might be enlightenment or salvation. Here, their suggestion or recommendation would be beloved community. Thus, instead of having a given value at the center, our religion would have the vision, mission, goal, and aim of the creation and the fostering of beloved communities, both within the walls of our own fellowship here, but also beyond the walls of our fellowship in the larger world. And in the discussion that Rosemel and I had, we talked about adding a seventh petal to that flower, namely, it would be then the value of loving kindness. So you would extend the word love, and that would speak more specifically about what kind of love we're talking about. And to me, it's a really interesting recommendation. I don't know where it's going to get anywhere, but putting that vision at the center of our religious association, it's an intriguing one, and it really kind of shifts the approach and dynamic of our religion. Okay, it's time and perhaps past time for a musical interlude, which Sally will play. And George, would you please return us now to slide 27? So next we turn to the second major proposed change in our Article 2 bylaws, namely a restatement of what is currently referred to as our six sources. George, oh, there they are. All right. So this is our current sources. There'll be three slides on this. So the living tradition from which we draw from, which we share, draws from many sources. One, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Two, words and deeds of prophetic people, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Three, wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Fourth is Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Five is humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against the idolatries of the mind and spirit. And then sixth, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. In our, if you could bring up the next slide, in our current Article 2 bylaws, this section concludes with these words: grateful for the religious pluralism which enriches and ennobles our faith, we are inspired to deepen our understanding and expand our vision. As free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust and support. And my comment is that there was an attempt in the General Assembly in 2009 to expand these six sources to, for example, add the arts and Eastern religions as sources, but that proposed revision didn't quite make it out of the starting gate, so to speak, and it didn't get to the second year vote. The proposed revision of this Article II Study Commission now, with one exception, makes no attempt to list specific sources and instead renames sources as inspirations and opens the field completely. Here's their proposed revision, George. So it's C23 inspirations. Now the first one is repeated. Direct experiences of transcending mystery and wonder are primary sources of Unitarian Universalist inspiration. These experiences open our hearts, renew our spirits, and transform our lives. We draw upon and are inspired by sacred, secular, and scientific understandings that help us make meaning and live into our values. These sources ground us and sustain us in ordinary, difficult, and joyous times. We respect the histories, contexts, and cultures in which these sources were created and are currently practiced, grateful for the experiences that move us, aware of the religious ancestries we inherit, and enlivened by the diversity which enriches our faith. We are called to ever deepen and expand our vision. And so you see, the only source of inspiration carried over from the current six sources is that first one, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder. And actually, this was a revision from their original proposal. The one that was actually presented last summer at the General Assembly didn't make reference to any of them. So that was an amendment. That first one was amended to this. And so now we move now to the last two sections of the Article 2 bylaws, which have some adjustments, though not such immediately obvious ones, But perhaps they could get a little bit pushback, and they will for me, actually, in a bit. In both the current and proposed articles, they are titled Inclusion. And George, could I have the first statement? There it is. So this is what we currently have under this section called Inclusion. Systems of power, privilege, and oppression have traditionally created barriers for persons and groups with particular identities, ages, abilities, and histories. We pledge to replace such barriers with ever-widening circles of solidarity and mutual respect. We strive to be an association of congregations that truly welcome all persons and commit to structuring congregational and associational life in ways that empower and enhance everyone's participation. And here's the proposed section on inclusion. The first two sentences are the same, but then we're going to get a couple changes. So I'll just quickly read those first two again. Systems of power, privilege, and oppression have traditionally created barriers for persons and groups with particular identities, ages, abilities, and histories. We pledge to replace such barriers with ever-widening circles of solidarity and mutual support. And now what's happened is they've broken the third sentence into two sentences. We strive to be an association of congregations that truly welcome all persons who share our values. We commit to being an association of congregations that empowers and enhances everyone's participation, especially those with historically marginalized identities. So if I've been reviewing the proposed rewriting of the Article 2 bylaws, I've got to say that the rewriting of the third sentence in this section is the one that gives me the most pause. The rewrite, as you see, is broken, as I mentioned, has broken up that third sentence into two sentences, adding clauses to each. Like the current third sentence, the proposed statement begins, we strive to be an association of congregations that truly welcomes all persons, but then the rewrite adds, who share our values. Now, of course, there is a place in congregational life where lines need to be drawn, and the congregation says, this behavior, this attitude, this position doesn't fly here. This is not who we are. This is not who we wish to be. And these are often difficult and contentious places in congregational life and actually in community life. But my concern with this rewrite here has to do with whether you want the question of who or what to exclude in a section titled Inclusion. And who determines whether one does or doesn't share our values? Who determines who does and does not belong? Who determines who is in covenant and who is not in covenant? And is it at odds with putting love at the center of the values? A welcoming, embracing love that says, as we often sing, come, come, whoever you are, or again, enter, rejoice, and come in. And so to me, this section has been, currently, is about an invitational vision of wholeness and of our common humanity. And, you know, come, come, whoever you are, if this vision appeals to you, you find it attractive, please come, please join us. I understand that at last year's General Assembly, there was a motion to remove the phrase, who share our values, but that didn't pass. A possibly even more delicate question to be raised in regard to this section relates to the new fourth sentence in the proposal. Again, it begins with the same language. We commit to being an association of congregations that empowers and enhances everyone's participation, but then it adds the clause, especially those with historically marginalized identities. Again, the concern for me is not about being blind to historic injustices and prejudices, nor about expanding our awareness of the same. But for me, it raises the question of the whole and the part. As I say, this section on inclusion has been about our Unitarian and Universalist vision of wholeness and of our common humanity, not about our differences. Also, practically speaking, many people are shy about immediately revealing themselves. And personally, as a minister, I have shied away from especially welcoming some when addressing the congregation as a whole. I try to make it clear that all are welcome here, whoever you are, wherever you are from, whatever your background, whoever you love, et cetera, you are welcome here. And I noticed that when you did that this morning, you didn't, you welcomed all. So, but because to me, going beyond that to specifying individuals belonging to various identity groups has the potential to change the trajectory, moving from being welcoming and invitational in relation to what binds us together in our common humanity to looking around and calling attention to our differences. And so I actually prefer the current language and trajectory, which reads, we strive to be an association of congregations that truly welcome all persons and commit to structuring congregational and associational life in ways that empower and enhance everyone's participation. So I don't know whether that will come again before the General Assembly this summer. At any rate, that's my comment on that. So the final section in both the current and proposed article has the heading Freedom of Belief. And George, you beat me again. Thank you. This is the current one. Nothing herein shall be deemed to infringe upon the individual freedom of belief, which is inherent in the Universalist and Unitarian heritages, or to conflict with any statement of purpose, covenant, or bond of union used by any congregation, unless such is used as a creedal test. The study commission in their work noted that many persons found the legalistic, quote, legalistic language and convoluted wording to be confusing, and so they recommend restating our, quote, strong commitment to congregational polity and individual right of conscience more simply and directly as follows. Congregational freedom and the individual's right of conscience are central to our Unitarian Universalist heritage. Congregations may establish statements of purpose, covenants, and bonds of union, so long as they do not require that members adhere to a particular creed. And I agree with the Article 2 Study Commission that this is indeed clearer language and also maintains our association's historic non-creedal approach in religion. So let me, I'm in the middle of cataract surgery, so I can see without my glasses, but I have to have them on to read my notes right now, right? So I'm looking at them. Any rate, let me conclude, and I'll do this quite quickly, with a couple of personal pastoral type thoughts that follow on the notion of this revised Article 2 as not being a creedal statement that requires allegiance or agreement. Rather, it's a statement attempting to put into words our association's approach to religion at this time, which the study commission, in statements that they have made, recognizes with humility, one, will not find universal agreement among us, and two, which they anticipate will change when another Article II study commission comes along in 15 years, should their recommended proposals pass at this General Assembly this year. I want to believe, I do believe, in the good faith of those who are involved on this study commission and putting forward their proposal. At the same time, there may be some somewhat different approaches in our circles between what might be called classical religious liberalism, which has an emphasis on individual freedom of belief, and a somewhat different Unitarian Universalist approach with an emphasis on a more collective way of approaching issues of social justice. Can these differences in approach be brought together? Do the proposed changes to Article 2 facilitate their process, that process? So as with any significant change like this, there are likely to be three basic responses. One, those who enthusiastically embrace the proposed changes and see them as forward-looking. Two, those who refer our current statements, which they regard as having served us well, and why do they need to be changed? And three, those who aren't particularly interested or engaged in the proposed changes. I'm sure it doesn't include any of you here, no. Now, in my sermon last year, I had suggested that a way be found to preserve the current principles and sources to which so many in our association are attached. Perhaps as in the Christian tradition, when you have creeds and confessions being added without dispensing of the previous ones. I've read that there were amendments at last year's General Assembly to add sections that would keep the historic principles and sources, but those amendments didn't pass. Nevertheless, per the Freedom of Belief section, there is nothing to prevent individual congregations from retaining and referring to them. When I was a minister and leading, I am still a minister, but I'm retired, okay? But when I was an active minister and leading new member orientation classes, in addition to introducing the current seven principles and six sources to prospective members, I would typically put forward other statements that addressed our approach to religion, and including the one that was written by my colleague, David Rankin, that I read, that we had as a responsive reading this morning. Now, I show you that little wallet-sized card. Well, there's another one that includes the principles and sources, and there's no reason why you need to throw those away. You can keep them, all right? Let me end with this. In my sermon last year, I said that I saw the overall trajectory of the proposed changes as being primarily extroverted and oriented to the outer world, with very little attention given to the interior life or towards one of the proposed stated purposes of the new proposal, namely to foster lifelong faith formation and spiritual development. Now this they did add this year, direct experiences of transcending mystery and wonder, which I applaud. Nevertheless, it will be the task of individual congregations to attend to what has always been a primary function of religion and religious organizations, namely, to assist individuals in grounding, centering, and anchoring themselves in relation to what I like to call the quintessential human questions, and these are the questions that make us a religious species, questions such as, who are we in this vast universe in which we find ourselves, and what sense, if any, are we to make out of it? How am I part of the whole? How is the whole part of me? What meaning, what purpose may be ascribed to my life? How should I live my life? What ought I to be about? And finally, to what or to whom should I ultimately devote myself? What is worthy of that devotion? To me, these are some of the more inward, personal, human questions that I trust a religious organization like this one will continue to address, and around which they will create a loving, welcoming, and embracing community. I want to close, and you want to join me up here, Annalise? I want to close with words of benediction. These are from the Reverend Frederick Gillis, and they're adapted by the Reverend Dr. Tandeyaka. The love that overcomes all differences, that heals all wounds, that puts to flight all fears, that reconciles all who are separated, is in us and among us, now and always.